The two moves, while the Guardians sent Shane Bieber, who was coming back from rehab, he ends up going to Toronto for Cal Stevens. And then they also sent reliever Paul Sewald to Detroit for future consideration. So that is the two moves that the Guardians have made so far today. They have the day off. Let's get more information from a man in the know, fresh off a trip to Cooperstown. He's a super friend of the show from MLB.com. You know him and love him as Anthony Castrovince, and he's on the fan hotline right now. Anthony, my friend, how are you?
I'm great. It's a great day to be a Guardians fan, isn't it?
I don't know. Is it? You tell me. I think if they trade Stephen Kwan, the fans are not going to be happy.
Yeah. No, I don't blame them one bit. It's just been a very heavy season, right? So everything's just felt heavy this year.
Yeah.
They've struggled to really piece things together in the win column. It's amazing they're 500 in spite of the way a lot of things have gone. But they just haven't had that edge to them. And then, you know, you kind of get a gambling scandal blows up in your face, and next thing you know, here you are at the trade deadline where I don't know if what we've seen is the extent of things or if there's still another big one coming. I think we all know, like you just said, I mean, how that would be perceived by the fan base, that would be pretty rough, but so has this whole week has been rough for them.
Sure. Anthony, if you have to run, we understand, trade deadline coming up in less than 5 hours. With that said, Mason Miller, closer, gets traded from the Athletics to the Padres. Johan Duran, closer, goes from the Twins to the Phillies. And Emmanuel Clase is sitting at home right now and can't play until August 31st. You think Clase would have been one of those guys?
I really do. I think they've kind of wavered back and forth, in recent weeks. And just with the light schedule in the second half, you wondered how they respond to that. But just generally speaking, I think it was an environment where there's so many teams hungry for help in that area. And I just think it was a chance for them to be opportunistic. But obviously that goes out the window now.
All right, let's get into the Guardians. At Bieber to Toronto, your thoughts on that as the Guardians front office deals with their old friends in Toronto?
Yeah, it's kind of amusing how, they extend Andrés Giménez, Miles Straw. They do this deal with Bieber, which at the time people were justifiably excited about, to bring him back in the fold when that didn't seem possible prior to his injury. But and all those guys end up shipped off to Canada. So
Guardians North, right? Isn't that?
That's Guardians North.
That's what the T-shirt could say.
Obviously, a great working relationship between those two front offices. And, the Blue Jays are in a position where they can it's a calculated gamble on Bieber where you're going to owe him about, I think it's around $6 or $7 million for the remainder of this year. If you factor in the buyout for next year, but you've got that player option for $16 million, which really kind of hung over the Guardians' head. So it made sense to just, move that money first and foremost. He hasn't obviously thrown a pitch for them this year, but I like it for the Blue Jays. I love Shane Bieber, great guy, hard worker, and I really root for good things for him in his return from surgery here. It's obviously been a painstaking process, and he's evidenced that, it's not always as smooth as you want or think it might be. But if he can deliver them some good innings down the stretch, I really like that a lot on a team that has definitely overshot expectations in a big way this year.
Anthony, if he's going to pick up that option, don't you think they would have kept him?
I don't know. I mean, this is what hangs in the air with the Luis Ortiz / Emmanuel Clase situation, unfortunate as it is. It really changes your construction for next year, where those guys were obviously, if you were going to keep Clase past the trade deadline, and again, who knows, it's to lose two huge building blocks on your pitching staff like that, affordable pieces at that, really changes the way you construct your club for next year. And $16 million for Shane Bieber, who, again, we don't know what the stuff is going to be. We don't know what the success is going to be. I think it made all the sense in the world for them to move him now and to not have, that financial reality kind of hanging in the air on a team that doesn't have a lot of financial resources at its disposal, for a front office that doesn't have a lot of financial resources at its disposal. Do you want to have the possibility of, committing $16 million to Shane Bieber you know, with all that missed time. Again, I love the guy, and I think he'll come out, you know, on the, on a good side of this, but you can't, it's not my money to play with. And so, I just think that's a big commitment, you know, with so much uncertainty now for 2026, given what has just happened.
Interesting. Why would you trade Stephen Kwan? Is it because you're hoping to get overwhelmed with an offer since there are not a ton of bats out there available?
Right.
Are you afraid of what might be coming down the road in free agency with him? Well, the idea of why you trade one of two or three guys who can actually hit for you is the puzzling aspect here.
Right, and it goes back to what I just said. I mean, I think that what happened with, you know, completely having your 2026 plans dramatically altered, then you start to go down the road of, okay, what is this? Are we going to go super young and try to build things up again? That's a real possibility. I mean, the other possibility is just you figure something out with Stephen Kwan. I mean, they certainly had extension talks in the past, and maybe here, sometimes deadlines spur action in that regard as well. You know, so maybe you throw a bunch of money at Stephen Kwan and get him to stick around. I don't know, but if that's not going to happen, and they have a better sense of that than I do, as far as, you know, where those conversations, you know, what the holdup is, how far apart they are, all that, you know, maybe you start to get realistic about your future and how things look for 2026, 2027, which is the years you have control of Stephen Kwan, and looking at a trade market that is super light on bats. I mean, super, super, super light. So, if you can get a haul that includes, you know, a couple top 100 prospects, a higher end, you know, within that top 100, you know, within that, I mean, I think you got to think long and hard about that, just given what has just transpired in the past, you know, in the past few weeks where again, I mean, crucial pieces of, you know, crucial building blocks of your pitching staff have just been taken away from you. And so, you know, how deep that goes, I don't know, because this is the front office that's very reluctant to do a rebuild. They don't want to turn off the fan base, you know, at large. And look where it's gotten them. You know, they've been very smart, generally speaking, about moving guys at the right time. You know, they've certainly traded away a lot of talent, but they've been pretty diligent about, you know, doing it the right time, not rushing the process, sticking to their demands with other teams. And that's not going to change, in light of what's happened this week. I mean, they have a high price on Stephen Kwan. I'm sure they'll maintain that price. And if they don't get it, they won't move him. But if they do move him, it will be because A, the market just presented an opportunity that was too good to pass up. And B, you have to be honest with yourself about what does 2026 look like? You know, and it could look a lot younger than they had envisioned earlier.
Mm. Anthony Castrovitz, MLB.com, joining us on the fan hotline. I want to go back for 1 second because Jeff and I talked about this as far as Bieber was concerned. How do you think that, I mean, we all knew Bieber was going to be out for a good portion of this season, right? How did he end up getting the option on the second year?
Well, oftentimes that is part of those deals where it just is, you know, for the player's benefit, you know, where there's just so much unknown in the air. And Shane Bieber, let's face it, Shane Bieber had bad timing when it comes to the injury. You know, he missed out on a very lucrative opportunity. And there were probably more lucrative opportunities for him for the 1 year, for 2025. Mm-hmm. But he did value, you know, the training staff here, the continuity that comes with that. And then, yeah, you put it in his hands, you know, where if things do go off the rails, if he can't come back from this thing, or if he comes back a very much lesser version of himself, at least he had that financial security for that second year. So yeah, it was kind of like, I don't know how to phrase this. It's not like he's doing them a favor, re-signing with them. I mean, both sides took on risk with that deal, but he did probably go below market to come back to Cleveland because of the continuity. And they do him the solid with the player
the
option.
But, okay, that makes sense.
And I don't even know what it's still, as of, you know, here we are July 31st. There's not a ton of season left, but there's still enough season left where who knows what happens with that player option. You know, if he comes back strong and he pitches now for a contender and pitches well and pitches in the postseason well, I mean, boom, you know, so much for the player option. He can probably do a lot better. So it'll be fascinating to see him in the next couple months, and I'll be rooting for him hard.
Reliever Paul Sewald goes to Detroit for a player to be named later or money, right?
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with trading with Detroit. Yeah, you got to help me on this one. Or unless they think that Seawald, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, it's Paul Seawald in a not good year, veteran guy, gets to go pitch for a contender. You know, they add some veteran presence to their bullpen. No big deal. You know, we're kind of getting away from that mindset anyway, of trading with the division. I think it's a little different for like if you were to trade Stephen Kwan to the Tigers, you know, and then face him, you know, whatever it is, 15 times a year for the next couple of years.
It's not 17 anymore, thank goodness.
I know, I'm always forgetting the math now, but you know, that's probably different, but still, generally speaking, I mean, everybody's competing with everyone in the league now with three wild card spots. I mean, so if you're going to go down that road, you know, it's dangerous to trade with anybody in your league.
In the AL,
you see more of those intra-division deals. You don't see the reluctance to do that the way you once did. And yeah, Paul Seawald for the next couple months where, you know, they're not really competing with the Tigers for the division at this point. And again, that's a good dude. I hope he puts it together for them in the last couple months here.
Anthony Castrovince joining us, MLB.com. Are you hearing anything about the situations with Emmanuel Clase and Luis Ortiz? And is there any way they're on the field this year?
Well, I'll just say that, you know, if it gets to this point, it's not good. Generally speaking, like to remove them from the field, obviously, you know, there's evidence that they're investigating, and boy, that's the cardinal sin of baseball is to get involved with gambling. And I know there's been a lot of criticism of, you know, the partnerships that the league has with betting partners and whatnot. But, you know, the Supreme Court made a decision in 2018 that really changed the whole landscape of sports gambling with or without the league's participation. You're going to have these, you know, apps aplenty and micro bets, and baseball more than any other sport lends itself to those micro bets. You know, you can bet on every pitch if you want. So it's pretty ugly. And the players are very well educated on, you know, what to do, what not to do. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it got to this point with these guys where, you know, to even be removed from the field for the investigation is obviously not a good look.
Do you think the leagues, because there's legislation in Jersey now, do you think the leagues could put pressure on their partners at the gaming firms, although they're not partners with everybody, but to get rid of the micro bets?
I don't know, because like you just said, in some sense, the cat's out of the bag. I mean, in some sense, the gambling companies have seen the opportunity that exists here, the marketplace that exists, you know, for this. I was at a game a few weeks ago, and someone just stood up cheering at a very random spot. And I was like, what? Did I miss something? And I realized, oh, it's probably some kind of silly bet that I don't understand. you know, it's just out there. And so, yeah, like you said, I mean, they could maybe lean on their partners. I don't know, but it doesn't mean there's some other company out there that'll take that bet on, you know. But I would also say that, look, the fact that we know about this stuff is a positive in light of, you know, it's an awful situation, but everything is on the books now. I mean, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that, maybe not micro bets, but let's not kid ourselves into thinking that there wasn't, you know, gambling on sports and baseball in particular going on prior to the 2018 Supreme Court ruling. Of course it was, you know, off the books. And, you know, having this stuff on the books, having this stuff, you know, with a paper trail, for lack of a better term, even though it's not paper, it's an app, but is how these guys got caught, is how these situations raised red flags where, hey, that's a lot of bets on a first pitch of a, you know, of a whatever inning it happened to be, you know, that caught people's eyes.
And those so bets are all in Ohio, New York, and New Jersey.
So the system worked in that regard. So, I mean, that's a good thing that comes out of this, is at least we know that system is working.
Anthony, what value might Carlos Santana have to some team in the next 4 hours and 43 minutes?
I don't know. I think the value is just, you know, I don't know. It's not high. It's just more about, from the Guardians' perspective, it's just more about freeing up at bats for others at this point. That's just kind of where we're at. It is a market light on bats, and people, you know, certain teams, certain clubhouses value veteran presence more than others, but the cold, hard analytical perspective, no, not a high amount of trade value there.
All right. So if they trade Kwan, is that thrown in the towel in the season? Is that, you got to go back to your clubhouse tomorrow and say, all right, well, let's just get through this. I mean, just, they're a young group. that as Quan said, Quan said he wanted to play here, right? And so it's like, right. if Quan's gone, you're just saying, all right, we're looking at next year.
You might be saying you're looking at 2027, to be honest with you.
That's true too.
Because they're pretty light offensively, and like you said, I mean that's one of their best players. I think the other possibility here, just like I alluded to earlier, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that you use this opportunity for things to come to a head and say, all right, if this is where you want to be, and you know, can we work out a deal here? If in season, so that's unusual, but it's not unprecedented. But yeah, is it throwing it? If you trade Stephen Kwan, are you throwing this out for this year? Yeah, and probably, you know, I would think next year too, unless I'm missing something where they have a lot more coming than I realize, or, you know, a lot more spending coming than I realize. But if that was the case, then you wouldn't be trading Stephen Kwan in the first place.
Anthony, thank you. We appreciate you. You got a busy day today, and just thank you so much for joining us and giving us the lowdown. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Anthony.
Absolutely, guys.
Oh. All right, fine. Then, you know what? Okay, Matt Derry, Derry Brothers Guardians cast on the free Odyssey app, 92.3 The Fan at Derry Speaks on Twitter. He's on the Fan Hotline. Okay, fine. I'm just going to be you guys want
it? I still think
I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you. Do you think the Browns are giving Shedeur Sanders a fair opportunity, Matt? I'm just going to ask you Browns questions if you guys just want to be sticks in the mud and talk Browns all the time. At trade deadline here, I'm bringing Matt on to talk baseball, and you guys are just sitting there saying the season's not going through the motions about the season not over. Fine. Should Shedeur get more reps, Matt? Should he get reps with the ones? Come on. Camp today.
What time you guys doing Vinny Bernie?
With Judas Priest. Is this we on 14:20 this morning, or what's going on?
Hey, I missed Tim Couch and Kelly Smith.
That was more our generation there. All right, Matt. You had some very strong words to the point I texted you. I go, you for real, brother?
Did you?
You said if Stephen Kwan got traded, you were done with the Guardians until the Dolans sold the team. I think a lot of people wanted to agree with you, but did you really mean that, Matt?
Well, look, I like doing the podcast. I like watching the games, but I would have taken my fandom about three levels down. I'm not going to spend my amounts of time and my energy on something where they don't care about me. You know, I'm a paying customer. My brother's a paying customer. And you treat us that way at your restaurant, I'm not coming to eat there anymore. I mean, the Guardians basically right now are that restaurant that refuses to put the menu on their website, but you got to go to the Facebook page to see it. That's what they are. They're still up and running. Food's probably not bad, but they're not making it real easy for you to find it. And that's what they're doing right now. What answers did we get from Chris Antonetti yesterday? Got nothing.
He wasn't wearing a polo, Matt.
Wasn't wearing a polo. That sends a message.
Oh, the golf shirt mafia took a day off?
Yesterday, I mean, it was athleisure.
Even Tony Soprano wore shorts once.
I'm frustrated. And look, I'm breathing a sigh of relief like you guys. Season is not over. You're right. I was at the gym today. The TV screens at SportsCenter on, and there's Guardians, only three out of the wild card. They're right there. But did they add any pieces? Did they go get another bat? You know, Harrison Bader would have been nice to put in right field instead of the guy that plays every day that has three home runs and is no good. But Chris Antonetti says he likes the roster. He's happy with where they are in 2025. It doesn't make any sense. I don't think they're trying. I don't think they're going to try next year either. They, the Dolans, and a bevy of owners, I would probably say a good 70% of the baseball owners, are ready to shut this thing down in 2027, and the countdown is on. And unfortunately, we're grouped in that mix.
Well, I was going to ask you why you think all of a sudden after, you know, a decade of, you know, on again, little off, on again, real contention for playoff spots every year, and then, you know, giving fans some great moments, why you think all of a sudden this is the way they want to go following an ALCS year. And what you're basically saying, it's all the economics of baseball. It's all about that work stoppage coming up.
I truly believe that, Anthony. I think this is all financially related. I mean, we can say they're not trying. And of course they want to win. Of course Chris Antonetti wants to win. Of course Mike Chernoff wants to win. They hired a really good manager who wants to win, and Stephen Vogt. I mean, he's done a good job. The owner wants to win, but they don't want to try. They don't want to put forth the effort, which means spending money, and they've got a lot of things. I know Ken talks about all the time, the TV contract. They've got a lot of excuses, and they shut down basically a lot of the media questioning. They do a great job of spin, And, you know, Chris Antonetti was, whoever it was, Joe Noga, whoever it was yesterday that said, how close are you to trading Stephen Kwan? Which is a legitimate question. And his response is, I'll just tell you what I told Stephen, which is, we love him and so do the other teams. That's not an answer. But they're not being pressed because they're actually not a bad team. They're an average team, but they're actually still in it. But watching every night like I do, you can't tell me you're serious when you're putting Arias out there every day and Jones out there every day. You're not serious. Manzardo hits two home runs and the next night isn't in the lineup. You're not serious. And that's too bad because I'm serious. You guys are serious. We want to see a winner. And half the division right now is giving up. Detroit went dumpster diving at the deadline. They didn't spend any money and go get anybody real because they're also trying to watch their financial responsibility. It's crazy. They're in first place. They should be going for it. Even they didn't go for it.
I'm Matt Derry with us on the hotline. Yesterday, I was resigned to the fact with all the news and rumors on social media that Kwan was going to get traded. He wasn't. So what do you think that means for the future of Kwan? Is this just delaying the inevitable?
I hope not. I hope that somehow there's some sort of Hail Mary that you know, a Tim Couch to Kevin Johnson. There you go, Ken. That occurs.
Here it is.
So that occurs so that we can keep a guy that wants to be here, that is exemplifies everything you want in a Cleveland Guardian and how he plays on both sides, offensively and defensively, is an unbelievable guy in the community and is a really good to great player. And you want to keep those people. You got a complete Hail Mary on Jose Ramirez. And since then, everybody's been has unfortunately left. And now, you know, you traded a Cy Young Award winner yesterday, which I actually liked that trade, getting Steven from the Blue Jays. I thought that was pretty good. But I don't know, Anthony. I think everything is focused on a lockout in 2027. And, you know, fans are thinking, what about this offseason? What's free agency going to look like? They sat out the last couple off seasons. What makes you think they're going to do anything this offseason? I think, unfortunately, right now, everything's on hold. Everything.
Well, I read the CBS report. Matt Derry joins us here on the show. I read the CBS Sports, not report, but they did the grades, right? And they gave the Guardians a big fat F. The writers from CBS did. And they brought up the Bieber thing. And I said, well, you know, this is where the national writers and the Cleveland Guardians fans have been on different pages for a very long time. Because usually it's been fans are mad, national media loves the Guardians. They're going right after the Guardians, and you sit there and you go, well, wait a minute. I made peace with Shane Bieber being traded at the beginning of last year, and then Lima described it as found money because he's able to come back. I didn't really know what he was going to be able to provide us considering we had to push back all his starting again. So, Matt, like, do you see this season as, like, a lost season? Do you see this season as still having a chance? It's just this weird void of anything that comes to how competitive they really are, if they are.
There is a chance, and here's why. It has nothing to do with the Guardians really going for it and wanting to win. It's because everything around them is blowing up, and they can actually walk over the coals and get to the other side. They have three games this weekend with a team that just traded 10 players. Imagine doing this radio show in Minnesota, in Minneapolis and St. Paul this morning. The Twins can't field a roster. That ownership has been trying to sell, couldn't sell to the Ishbia Group, who bought the White Sox instead, and now they're like, get us out of here. They just traded everybody. The Astros just took all the money on the Carlos Correa deal. Like, that's insanity. You just traded 10 players, both your closers, Duran and Griffin Jacks. I mean, the Twins are coming in this weekend with no roster, so there's no reason the Guardians can't win 2 out of 3 or sweep. So you look up and go, oh, they're only 3 back, but there's so many teams that aren't trying that are just giving up. And so there's a shot. You never know. But are they good enough on the field to make a run based off of what happened last year? No, they're not. They're not. Teams like Texas, Seattle, Yankees all added, even Detroit to an extent added a little, and they're all superior. But to make the third wild card, yeah, they could do that.
So now that Shane Bieber and his days are over here in Cleveland, what do you make of the Shane Bieber career as a Guardian? Cy Young Award winner, somebody who won the pitching triple crown. We remember him in the All-Star game here in Cleveland. What do you think?
Oh, I love the guy. I thought he was great. Unfortunately, the Tommy John surgery was you know, just sucked because having, if you would have had him last year in the playoffs, who knows how differently that would have looked. I have nothing but love for him. To the fact that he decided to sign back up for this year and work with the same pitching group and the doctors and said he wanted to, you know, give it a shot. I thought that was cool. And I don't blame either side for what happened yesterday. I think the Cal Steven kid from Toronto has a chance to be really good. And that's a top five prospect in the Blue Jays system. The Bieber thing does not bother me that much. I know fans on the periphery and casuals, as they say, would go, oh, they traded another Cy Young Award winner. Hold on a second. The trade they made when they got rid of Corey Kluber to get Class A was a great trade. Maybe this trade will work out. Shane Bieber was not, N-O-T, was not picking up his player option next year. He wasn't. He's trying to go out and, especially with the lockout coming, and get as much money as he can, and I don't think the Guardians would have, I know for a fact they weren't going to pay him if he pitches well in September. So I got nothing but love for the guy.
All right, this came up yesterday on the Emerging Podcast Scene, of which I know from one podcast person to another that you're dialed in. But what do we say now about Shane Bieber's Cy Young Award season in the COVID year?
It still counts. No? I don't know.
Well, I'm said it didn't.
He had 16 starts that season.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, 12.
So you're saying it doesn't count.
No, I'm asking you how much it counts.
I say it does. You play the season, the records are the records. I have no issue with it.
It counts. Yeah. It just doesn't count as much as the other Cy Young Awards.
No, you introed one of the questions as former Cy Young Award winner. So
yes,
I didn't jump up and down.
We asked this at the time. What if that would have been the Guardians/Indians World Series title that year?
I would have fine. I would have taken it. I just want one. I don't care how it comes to me. Just bring it to me, please. I want to put that ring on one day. I'm dying here. Dying.
What do you think of LeBron's bubble championship?
That was a joke.
Oh, wait a minute now. Wait a minute. There's still a trophy in the case. You can't call it a joke if you're not going to call Shane Bieber's a joke. Thank you.
Oh man, if I have to watch Nolan Jones tonight, I swear to God.
Continue. Keep going. Hold on. Keep building on that sentence there. I want to see where you go with this.
I pick on him on our podcast, and I probably shouldn't.
But you should.
I mean, I just, that's the thing that bothers me, is that this team is not bad. I don't know if they're good. They're probably right down the middle, but man, there's other options. There has to be if you're trying to win, and I just don't get it. It drives me crazy.
Matt, we were talking earlier. Owen had asked, would it have been addition by subtraction if Carlos Santana had been dealt? Like, what do you think now this lineup is going to look like going forward, and what does it mean for Kafis? What does it mean for Manzardo?
Kyle Manzardo should be playing every day. I don't care if it's DH, first base. I don't care if you have to teach him right field. Put him out there so you can find out what you have. The kid's hitting the ball over the fence. He's got talent. There's something there. Anytime I don't see him, I don't understand it. Carlos, God bless him. Love the guy. But 39, obviously declining at the plate. And for Manzardo not to play on Wednesday just makes no sense. I don't know, and Todd and I talked about it on the pod last night when we recorded. I don't know if that was the front office telling Vogt, put Santana out there on Wednesday regardless so we can showcase him for Thursday and trade. But no one wanted him, obviously, staying here. Maybe nobody wanted to take on that money for 2 months. I don't know, because he's a great dude. But Manzardo has got to be playing. I'd have Kafis up here right now. I would, but they're not going to. They just don't. It's not what they do. They stay in their lane. They stick with their plan. This is our plan. If it was the plan with DeLauder, it's probably the plan with Kafis, and it makes absolutely no sense. And their evaluation of position players is abysmal. Their evaluation of pitchers is unreal. The pitching factory is great, and this organization needs to be commended for how good they are with arms. But my gosh, Tyler Freeman comes back to town and lights us on fire Monday night, and we're watching Nolan Jones every day. It's just poor evaluation all across the board.
Hey, real quick, and I mean real quick, do you think Stephen Kwan would sign here, or does he just want to play on the West Coast?
No, Oh, I think he would want to sign here. I mean, maybe there's things we don't know. Maybe there was discussions where the agent says, here's the number, and the Guardians laughed at it. I don't know, but I truly believe he's a genuine person and told the media the other day, I want to be here. I mean, they're the ones that took a chance on him. They're the ones who believed in him. I mean, this is a guy, this is not a first-round pick. This isn't somebody that was highly regarded. He's a very good college player, but I think guys like it here. I know people who know players, and they do say they like it here. Tanner Bibee signed for a long term, wants to be here. So the guys, Shane Bieber came back. He hated it so much, he didn't have to. So they're doing something right in these guys liking it. But is it enough to give us, the fans, the paying customers, just a sniff of a championship? I mean, getting to the ALCS last year and just being close enough, man, it was a great year, and we got a bunch of extra gates. We made some extra money. We added some amenities. I'm going to sell those Carnegie Club seats next year if you're not even trying. Good luck. Feel bad for the salespeople.
Matt, thank you very much for the time. Find him on Twitter at Derry Speaks. It's Matt Derry, one half of the Derry Brothers Guardians cast on the free Odyssey app and 92.3 The Fan, 92.3TheFan.com. Matt Derry appears on. Matt, thank you for the time.
Thanks, boys.
Matt Derry. 9:31 on The Fan, and make sure no one thinks that this is recorded. We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger. He's the host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the Odyssey app, which is free, or wherever you get your podcast. Brian Baldinger joins us right now. Hello, Baldy.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing wonderful. I know you're making your tours and you're making your rounds of all the teams, and it's Hall of Fame weekend, so this is usually when the national media descends upon Cleveland. As of right now, are the Browns making a major mistake if they start anybody but Joe Flacco week one?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Joe is the most qualified. He's won games for Cleveland. Forget about his age. The arm is just as good as ever. He's in great shape, and he understands what he's doing out there right now. I don't think there's any rush. I mean, I don't know what Kenny's status is with his hamstring, and I haven't seen the rookies play yet, but I would think that, you know, it would behoove the Browns to win week one if their best chance to win is, I think, with Joe right now.
Okay, that's fine, Baldy, and we respect your football acumen. 9-9 yesterday, Shador Sanders. 9-9. I mean, come on. 9-9.
All right. We're charting for your charting these practices now.
Now, touchdowns.
Honestly, I mean, I see this stuff. Like, I know you're tongue in cheek here with this thing, but I mean, I do see these people that think, like, this is, like, I don't know, like, this is how you're winning the job on September 7th, is by what you do here, you know, in a practice session. Like, it's just not really the way it is.
You know, we joked, we had John Greco on earlier, and somebody, we like to bring on the football guys, the guys in the trenches, and he said, you know, he used to laugh about that. Guys talking about, especially like first day of pads, and you've got, you know, the people, the consumers, they want to know this stuff. They want to know how many completions, how many touchdowns, but the people that actually played the game, you know the circumstances, they can certainly dictate things. In Pittsburgh, they're talking about how Big Ben used to throw interceptions intentionally to either show up receivers or whatever. So what can we take away? What should we be looking for when we're watching these quarterbacks operate?
Well, I mean, you're looking for completions. I mean, I'm not undermining, the stat yesterday. But you're looking for completions. You're looking for command. You're looking for growth. You're looking for, does he get to a second read when Jerry Jeudy isn't open on the first read? Can he get to Cedric Tillman? Whatever. I mean, you're just looking for growth within the offense. Now, you know, some of these drills, the offense, the defense is coming after you, and sometimes, you know, Myles Garrett is, saving him for something a little bit more important. So, I mean, I do think you have to kind of temper the enthusiasm, but you're looking for growth. You're looking for, like, in any position. When I first started out as a rookie, free agent, I mean, I couldn't block Randy White the first 2 weeks of practice. But when I did block him in the third week, I went out and partied my ass off. You know, like it was, I felt like I was getting better. You know, I could stop the best defensive tackle in football. So you're just looking for growth. Sometimes it's minuscule. Sometimes it's just the way that you get the verbiage out of your mouth on an audible call. Sometimes it's identifying a particular defense and what they're doing. there's so many different ways that we can't really see. But, you know, the quarterback rooms, you know, the guys in the huddle, they can see it, and they know when it's going on.
Brian Baldinger joining us on the show. There's been a lot of – I mean, when you have four guys competing for a quarterback job, allegedly, I mean, I really think it was – Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco may be competing for the starting job, and then who's going to be the primary backup after that? You get a lot of crazy scenarios thrown out there. One of those scenarios was trading Dylan Gabriel, a third-round pick, or Shedeur Sanders, a fifth-round pick. If you're the Browns, I don't think anybody's going to offer you something crazy for either one of these guys. Would you ever entertain trading either one of these guys? I mean, what does it hurt to keep them there to see whether or not one of them has it, especially a guy like maybe Shedeur, who a lot of people feeling his ceiling is going to be very high?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't trade him. I mean, you just drafted him. You don't know what you have yet. I mean, you haven't played a game yet. I wouldn't trade either one of them. But they also knew that when they drafted these guys and they traded for Kenny Pickett and they brought Joe back, they knew it was going to be a crowded quarterback room. And we all knew when they went to camp with four quarterbacks like this, that the reps were, it wasn't going to favor anybody in trying to win a job right now. Just because it's so limited with basically one practice a day, if you get that, and just three preseason games. It's not going to be a substantial, amount of work for anyone. And you really want to make the evaluation, when Betonio and Teller and, the whole offense line is out there. And so it's very limited. It's very difficult. But I would not trade either one of them right now. I'd like to see them in some game action to see what they look like.
Brian Baldinger with us. So Kevin Stefanski has evolved the offense depending on who the quarterback has been. We've seen it change up in season when Flacco came in a couple of years ago, helped him get to the playoffs. Then it was Deshaun Watson. It changed again. Now it's evolved again depending on who wins this battle. So How difficult is that in terms of an evaluation? Because, yesterday I'm seeing a lot of short passes, mostly from the team. But yet, we as fans, we want to see guys that have a ceiling. We want to see guys take chances and throw the ball down the field.
Well, I mean, that's how ultimately you're going to beat Baltimore or Pittsburgh or Cincinnati with, their ability to score points, especially Cincinnati and Baltimore. So, you got to be able to put points up, and points come out of the offense with explosive plays. So you got to take your shots. But that's kind of how the offense is. I mean, I think you're going to go back to, running the football and play action passes off of it. And that plays to Joe's strength, ability to, to read the defense on those deep drops and the offense line giving them time to take the shots to Jerry Jeudy and the group going down the field. So, I mean, those are going to come. They're not the highest percentage of throws. The shorter passes, the plays in the middle of the field are the better percentage. But you're going to have to take your shots if you're going to compete in this division right now.
How much does, for a guy like Kevin Stefanski, 6 years in, he's been with some of these vets all 6 years, how much does their opinion weigh into when a rookie would get to play or when a younger quarterback would get to play like Kenny Pickett?
I think Kevin is a smart guy. I mean, he's been handed a pretty difficult hand here. But, he's been a good coordinator. He's been a good play caller. It's a lot to ask right now from Kevin. But I think he has a plan about how he's going to go about getting these guys a certain amount of reps to really make some, deeper evaluations about who could be the backup. Because I think Joe is the starter. So who's going to be the backup to Joe? And how long is Joe the starter? I mean, if they get off to a rough start, does it make any sense to play Joe if, it looks like you're not going to have a winning season, you're not going to be very competitive. I mean, you might as well put some of those guys in. Those are decisions that get made maybe in October. And so for right now, it's about, making sure you get the right evaluation for the guy that's going to be the next man up, because that guy is always one play away.
Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger joining us on the show. Do you find Kevin Stefanski to be a top half NFL head coach?
Yeah, I like Kevin. I like Kevin a lot. He's gotten to the playoffs, twice now? It's not they've had difficulty, obviously, at the quarterback position. Nobody has juggled more quarterbacks than Kevin. He looked a lot better as a play caller when Kirk Cousins lined up every single day in Minnesota as the quarterback, and they won a lot of games. But I would say that he's in the upper half. I think he's got a command of the team. I think they respond to him. And, you know, for those kind of things, he's got some stability because of it.
You know, it's unfortunate, Baldy, what's happened at the start of camp, the running back position. You've had an injury, and then you've had a player not signed yet who unfortunately is dealing with some legal issues in Florida with Quinshon Judkins. Now, he was taken 36 overall. First of all, how big of a blow is it for him not to be there now? And does it matter whether he's a running back, whether he's a tight end, a quarterback? Do you think it matters, depending on the position, on how much they'll be behind?
Well, he's going to be behind. It's, you know, it's very unfortunate, but it's the reality. And so you have to deal with it. But I would say if there's one position that you can get up to speed quicker than any other position on the field is the running back position. I mean, so much of that is just instincts and vision, and it looks like Quinshon has all of those abilities. That's kind of the sweet spot of the draft for running backs, top of the second round. That's where he was. So, look, I think I'm not going to say you're going to plug and play him whenever he gets this legal matter handled, and we'll see the fallout of that. But I would say, you know, if there's one position you can get him on the field the quickest and count on some production, it's the running back position.
What does the success look like if Aaron Rodgers works out in Pittsburgh? Do you think he'll work out in Pittsburgh?
I think he's got a good chance. I thought that he struggled last year, but he was banged up for much of the year, especially to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the most penalized team in football last year. I mean, they had the ball on the 1 yard line against Denver in week four, and they couldn't score. And all they needed was a touchdown to win the game. You know, they were so heavily penalized. I don't think you're going to get that in a Mike Tomlin coach team. So I think the stability that every quarterback really requires to be successful, he's going to get that. He's got a star X receiver that I think is going to get a lot of targets in DK. I think he's going to fall in love with his 6'7" tight end, Darnell Washington. And if the line, you know, comes together, they've been working on it for 3 years now, trying to get this thing together. If it comes together, I think he's got a chance for some success. But, you know, watching him last year, I mean, he was not great at the end of games when you needed Aaron to be great. He looked like a 40-year-old quarterback for a lot of the season last year. I know he finished strong, but, I mean, I think you have to, if you're evaluating Aaron, and I'm going to see him tomorrow in Latrobe, but if you're evaluating him right now, you got to think, and you got to play against him in game plan. You got to think you're going to get the best of Aaron Rodgers and not a a broken down 41-year-old quarterback. You got to think that the arm is going to be elite, decision making is going to be elite, and that's how you have to game plan it right now.
You had a chance to talk to Lamar Jackson as part of your coverage recently. When you are at Baltimore, obviously they are looking at getting through in the playoffs and having Lamar play at a different level in the postseason. Do you think it changes anytime soon with them, or do you think they'll just continue to be a great regular season team? He'll be a great regular season quarterback, but come postseason, there's still some issues.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I mean, I know they've lost in the postseason. I mean, Mark Andrews catches the ball at the goal line, he probably win that game. And they march on, they beat Buffalo. Those things happen. But I think he just is an improving player. He's 28 years old. I mean, Peyton Manning won his Super Bowl when he was 31. I mean, you look through the list of guys who won Super Bowls and what their age was sometimes. Sometimes you just got to keep chopping wood. I mean, Lamar is not going to regress. He's not going backwards. The guy's only improving. Nobody sees the field on the dead run better than him in this business. And so, you know, you throw 41 touchdowns and 4 interceptions and run for about 1,000 yards. I mean, we've never seen anything like it. And I think in the third year in Todd Monken's system and what T. Martin is helping him do at the quarterback position as his coach, I think he's just going to improve. And he is a hungry, hungry man, not just to win a Super Bowl, but to win multiple Super Bowls. I mean, that's how he's wired. So I got to think that you're going to see an improved play in the postseason. There was a time they get to the postseason, he was injured. Now he seems to have gotten over all of that. And I think the better days are in front of him.
Brian Baldinger joining us here on the hotline. Brian, does it bother you what guys who didn't play at a high level have said about Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen? Are they just the victims of playing in the same generation as Patrick Mahomes?
Well, I mean, there was always, you know, there was Tom Brady before that, and there was, you know, Troy Aikman and guys that won a lot of Super Bowls. But unfortunately or unfortunately, all quarterbacks get measured by how they play in the postseason. Peyton Manning was basically in that same category of Josh and Lamar until he won a Super Bowl. He didn't win the national championship at Tennessee. T. Martin did. I mean, that's what they said about Peyton, and he walked into the Hall of Fame. So all quarterbacks, you know, get scrutinized a little bit differently. But until Josh and Lamar actually win a Super Bowl the way Jalen Hurts just did this year, look, Jalen Hurts just won a Super Bowl this year, and people can't figure out how to put him in the top 10 as, you know, quarterbacks in this league, and all he does is win. So, I mean, everybody's going to be scrutinized different, and that's just part of the territory and part of the position and part of, you know, making elite money in this business right now.
It seems like in many ways, Baldy, that the NFL has become the NBA. Only seems like I hear about four or five teams that everybody references that can win the Super Bowl. Is there a team outside of the normal ones that everybody talks about that you think we are all overlooking?
Well, I think you'd be crazy if you're overlooking Washington. I think you'd be crazy if you're overlooking Tampa. You know,
Tampa?
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Baker plays.
I mean, you'd just be crazy. I mean, all they've done is win the division 4 years in a row. And, you know, Baker just had one of the top 10. I know you don't want to hear this in Cleveland, but, you know, there's only 10 quarterbacks in the history of this game that did what Baker did last year. Throw for over 40 touchdowns and 4,500 yards. And he's got, now, when his left tackle gets back, it's a big blow to that team right now, but he will be back, Tristan Wirfs. You know, he's a guy that can line up with Miles, you know, and go toe-to-toe without help and do, you know, probably as good as anybody else, be able to handle Miles one-on-one. So, and he is the difference maker at that position. But, you know, I think that Tampa is, you know, they've improved their defense with what they did in the draft, and they ran the ball great last year, something they weren't able to do when Tom Brady was the quarterback and winning a Super Bowl. So I think that's just an improving team right now.
Brian, we can't thank you enough for the time. We know you're busy as hell with all the training camp stuff going on. Look forward to seeing you. Look forward to watching you on NFL Network. Yeah. Take care.
All right, you bet, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Brian Baldinger joining us. Odyssey NFL Insider, Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. No one's going to believe me when I say this because I'm a host in Cleveland. And I had given up on him. I had absolutely given up. I didn't want to go trade for the guy they traded for, but I didn't think that he was going to be able to get the thing out of the fire. I don't have ill will or any angered feelings or anything about the entire Baker situation or about Baker Mayfield. I don't. No one wants to believe that because it's fun to argue. I look at it as a mistake that, all right, they're going to have to learn from at some point. Like, I don't know how Dillon Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders are going to play, right? So we'll find out about that. But say they perform the way a lot of people think they're going to perform, and we go get a quarterback next year. I think we're probably going to, if you are in this generation in the AFC, and you were going up against guys who are already in their prime, Burrow, Lamar, Josh Allen, Mahomes, we're going to do all this again with the next guy. Unless he comes in and he's as good as Mahomes.
Yeah.
We're going to do this again.
Doubt.
So it's, I hope
the hope is that those guys either plateau or their physical traits start to erode because they're going to be getting into their 30s.
But I'm telling you, it's going to happen again because you're going to raise the profile of what this football team's supposed to be. So it when it comes to Baker, yes, I would much rather be arguing about what it takes for Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns to get through the second round of the playoffs. I think that's where we'd be. I think we'd be arguing that he can't beat Lamar in the postseason or he can't beat Josh Allen or Mahomes, and I think that's a much healthier place to be in than where we're at right now, clearly. But I do feel that all those guys are still going to be there, and we're still going to have that argument with whoever, whether it be the Colin Cowherd theory that goes out there and ends up being Arch Manning, probably won't. Whether it be Drew Aller, who knows? Whether it be Lenore Sellers, whether it be anybody, I think we'll have that same conversation. I don't want the guy to be a bust, especially because we're going to have two first-round picks, so I'm already holding my breath. But I feel we're going to be in that same spot. I hope that whoever they get, one, they're able to handle him better than what the Browns did with Baker. Two, they handle it, being the quarterback X, handles it better than what Baker did, because Baker's even been honest about that. And yeah, I know when you're being really successful, it's easy to look back on things and go, oh yeah, I admit this, that, and the other. Maybe he's being that way. I'm not sure. It's easier to do that, fair. But I hope everybody handles the situation. I just look at it as a mistake that they have to grow from. And even myself in talking about the Browns, like, will I reach a point in 4 years with quarterback X where I'm like, you sure you guys want to do this? You sure you want to run this kid out of town? You sure we want to have this conversation again? Like, that's the only thing I try to do is grow from a mistake. Do we want to give up 3 first-round picks for a quarterback? Do we want to do that? Why is he available? In a league that's so strong for quarterbacks, why is this guy? Like, learn from a mistake. He got $30 million guaranteed. I could be petty and say, why didn't you pay him? Because you could always pay him earlier and then not have to pay him later, but at the same time, he's getting $30 million guaranteed next year. Congratulations on all his success. I like that Brian Boldinger ripped on camp stats. I love that he ripped on camp stats. Listen, I'm not opposed to the content. I'm just as guilty as anybody. It drives content. It drives SEO. You see something where you see Shador Sanders 9 for 9. I got to click on that. I know that drives content. I'm not going to introduce it into an argument for Shador Sanders, or certainly not against him. 9 for 9, you're not going to introduce it against Shador Sanders, but I'm not going to dump on the guy if he goes 4 for 12 according to the stats, or if he goes 9 for 9 according to the stats.
Well, what does it say to you that I let off the show or when we first started talking Browns today and I said, yeah, I don't care what the other quarterbacks are doing. I only care about one. Not even the starter. I mean, yeah, I hope Flacco is not looking like he fell off a cliff.
I kind of want to ask if everybody else believes the thing you're believing. Do you really only care about one quarterback?
I do. Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I think it just hit it right there for a lot of folks.
Owen is telling me to save it, so I will save it.
This has been 2 days ago. You know, it's like 90 degrees and 80% humidity a couple days ago, right? Fattest thing. I'm not as fat as I used to be, but obviously I'm still obese, right? Liz goes, pick up something for you and Axe on the way home. We're coming home from football practice. Now, I wear 3 layers because I want to get a good sweat going. And boy, I sweated my ass off on Tuesday. So I go get 4 tacos for me, 4 tacos for the Axe man. And Axel went upstairs and go, you take a shower first. I'll sit here. And I'm like, well, I got to get to bed at some point here. So I'm going to eat these tacos. And I'm shirtless. I'm in nothing but shorts and a shirt. Because I don't want my sweaty shirt while I'm trying to eat these Taco Bell tacos, right? I'll just call it out what it is. They're delicious. Nathan Zagura joins us right now on the fan hotline, so I'll tell Nathan this story too. So I'm shirtless, and I look over, and Liz is not in her office. Or Liz is in her office, and I go, stay in your office. She goes, why?
I want to see this depravity.
I'm going to be eating tacos shirtless, and I don't want you to see this. Axel comes downstairs. He's like, why aren't you wearing a shirt? I go, because I was sweaty, and I threw it in the laundry room, and I'm going to go upstairs and take a shower after I eat. And then, as I'm eating the tacos, I'm not wearing a shirt. I take a bite, and some of the meat and taco sauce spill on my bare gut.
Does it collect anywhere?
And I'm, like, cleaning it up on my bare gut. I look like Bobby Hill from King of the Hill when he's smearing the chocolate all over himself.
Quinn, if you're listening, please make that dynamic.
And I'm going,
let's see some AI imagery to this, please.
Everything I do, I'm very conservatively dressed all the time. I won't leave the master bedroom. And here I am at 39 years old pulling the fattest thing I've ever done. As hard as you work, you still go right back to square one. Hello, Nathan.
That's a heck of an image and an incredible way to start.
You should have seen it.
Ken.
You should have seen it. I want to know, though,
because you didn't. The one question I had was when you scraped the meat off of your body that had been probably dripping with sweat, did you eat that meat?
No, I cleaned it with a napkin. Nathan, I was a bowl of spaghetti.
I don't even know who you are anymore.
I was a bowl of spaghetti away from the guy in 7. That's how I look.
He wouldn't have thrown that meat out.
If Kevin Spacey would have been there, I would have had some other questions at dinner time, but we'll leave that there. All right, Nathan, good morning to you. How has Shador Sanders looked at camp? You know that's the first question.
I think he's looked really good, honestly. I think that he has a real ability to climb the pocket, keep his eyes downfield. He is an excellent deep ball thrower. His intermediate throws have been very good. He can throw with anticipation. I've been very impressed by him. Very impressed by him. Now, that's all the stuff that's, you know, between the lines. I think that we know going into this that there was a lot of work that had to be done, whether it be in the preparation, whether it be in understanding, you know, calling plays in the huddle. These are not easy plays to call in the huddle. All of those things, that I don't know, but what I can see, I've been very impressed, and I really hope that he does get some reps with the first team going forward. I think he certainly has earned that opportunity. I think that, you know, it's tough to get four guys first team reps, so I understand why it probably hasn't happened yet, but I do think he has earned the opportunity because he throws an incredibly good ball, a very catchable ball, and he's just so accurate. His ball placement is excellent. They had a play at the end of practice the other day. He had a great rollout and a throw there kind of in that live period at the end of practice, which was, I should have been the first question, quite frankly, Ken. Can you believe there was a live tackling period in a Kevin Stefanski training camp?
Amazing.
Yes, I told you guys months ago that this was going to be a much different camp, and certainly it already is, but back to Shador in that hungry dogs, it's kind of the opportunity period. There was a one-on-one for the push-ups on the line. Luke Floria made a great move on kind of a deep over, got around the corner. It had to be layered in kind of over him out in front, and it was a perfect ball from Shador. So, yeah, I've been very, very impressed with him. And, you know, all people saying, oh, it's going to be a circus, it's going to be a circus. It's absolutely nothing. He comes in, he works really hard, and he's done a great job.
So I think that is really interesting. Nathan is saying right now that he's earned some first team reps. Obviously, he went up against the first team defense. Finally, it's only been a week. That's the one thing we've been cautioning everybody. It is early.
Yeah, of course.
And Nathan, course, we are getting besieged by people all around the country because Shador brings with him that very passionate fan base. But I just want to stop you in your tracks. When you say, well, some of the work he needs to do that's not on the field, you mean that the classroom stuff and just that any rookie would need to get up to speed on all that stuff, right? Because when we mention that, we get crushed.
First of all, for sure. Second of all, I think people have to understand that in that kind of stuff, in the preparation, in calling the plays, in just things that the quarterback was asked to do pre-snap, Dylan Gabriel and his various stops in college was asked to do more than Shador was. That is no fault of Shador Sanders. None. That is not his fault. That's the way that things were operated at Colorado. And so he had a bigger learning curve. And I've said this many times on your guys' program, as well as on my own, that he has a bigger learning curve to get there. So on the things that I can see, I would like to see what I've seen on the field translate how that works with the first team offense against the first team defense. I'd like to see him get those opportunities. And I think that, you know, there's a chance that he will going forward. There's also a chance that he will not. People have to understand Dylan Gabriel is a third round pick. Shador Sanders is a fifth round pick. Now, I think most people, in fact, everybody I've ever talked to would agree that Shador had first or second round film. First or second round film, even his detractor said second round. He goes in the fifth round. So the reality is, and I think people look at this through different lenses, and I've said this many times, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, Shador has a profile and has skills that if he can master all the other stuff, his ability to throw the football where he wants to and get it there for completions is elite. So if he can master the other stuff and know where to go with the ball, know everything he needs to do pre-snap, know everything he needs to do post-snap, and then deliver the football, he's going to be a very, very good quarterback. I think people have to realize kind of from we're all looking for the savior, right? That's kind of the quest of the Cleveland Browns. Now, typically a third round quarterback and a fifth round quarterback aren't savior candidates. In fact, if Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders, based on where they were drafted alone, go on to be good career backups, that's actually a very valuable pick for the Cleveland Browns to be able to have somebody that was a backup on a rookie contract, for example, for the next 3 years after this season would be incredibly valuable. And if, you know, Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders can go on and have a career like a Kilt McCoy or a Case Keenum where, yes, they're good backups, they can start some games when you need them to, they can steward it maybe at their peak, they have, you know, a couple good season starts, it's also a very good pick. But we're looking for that savior. I like what I've seen from Shedeur Sanders. I'm not saying he is that, but I'd like to see him get some opportunities because, to me, there is something special, and people who I trust so much about their opinions about football on tape alone would have said that he had that kind of potential. They're very smart people that actually thought he was the best quarterback in this draft. So that's where I think a lot of it comes with Shedeur, but the reality of the situation is he is a fifth-round pick. He was picked second in this draft behind Dylan Gabriel, so he's going to have to – he's got a, more of a learning curve. We've said that, which is off the field, and then we got to see him, you know, hopefully earn those reps as they try to navigate having four quarterbacks get reps.
Nathan Zagura joining us here on the Fan Hotline. Yeah, Nathan, I totally agree with you on everything except one, like the backup quarterback thing, and it's just because of the timing right now. I mean, we are in the middle of an hysteria, and the fan base that Shedeur brings with him, they're just not going to accept that. And I think that that's why they've been really upset. They're upset by the lack of reps. They're upset because they've had a preconceived notion of the Cleveland Browns, so they believe that there's a mishandling here. But there's this buy-in that I just can't stand that says that the Browns are trying to sabotage him. And I'm going, the Browns are as desperate as anybody for a franchise quarterback. They've been looking for one since Bernie Kosar, for crying out loud. They're going to do every damn thing they can to see if they can get a franchise quarterback out of this group or the next group or the group after that.
Yeah, I think the notion that they would sabotage any quarterback that they believe has the potential to get them, you know, out of what has been, you know, a more than a quarter century odyssey to find that guy is pure foolishness. They are not sabotaging anybody. I think that one thing that you have to understand, and David Carr, the former number one overall pick in the draft, was out at camp a couple days ago, and he did an interview with Siciliano. And, you know, sometimes giving a quarterback, a young quarterback, too much can be very detrimental to them. And so understanding that, you know, you need to be brought along at the pace. Now, I will say that Shedeur Sanders has outpaced what I think their expectations were coming in, given the big learning curve that he had. He's worked diligently. He's absorbed things much quicker than I think that they thought, or are they pleased with the rate at which he's absorbing things. And so that is all good. They're definitely not sabotaging anybody. They've got to get somebody ready to start. And I think when you look at this, the likelihood, see, the people that are would say something like that are of the mindset that, man, Shedeur should have been the number two pick in the draft. And whether his talent ultimately will bear that out, I certainly hope it does. I'm a big fan of Shedeur Sanders. I was a big fan of his on tape. We talked about that back in the pre-draft process. The reality is he was a fifth-round pick in this draft. 31 other teams passed on him ad nauseum. The Browns passed on him multiple times and then took him. So he's not going to be just thrust into situations that the number two overall pick would be, even if you believe that that is his talent level. And if it is his talent level, by the way, that will be proven out in the future. Nobody is sabotaging anybody. I think it is very difficult to try to get four quarterbacks reps. I think the practices, honestly, when Pickett was down, just to get three quarterbacks reps worked was a lot easier for everybody. And Joe Flacco was on Browns Daily earlier this week, and what a tremendous human he is. And man, does he throw a beautiful football. He was just saying it was just those days were easier. Now, I think Kenny Pickett will likely be back today. Those are not scores. That's just talking to him and seeing him around the building. I think that this was maybe an abundance of caution, and you really want to have him ready to go for those joint practices because you've got to get somebody ready to start week one. And I think when you look at that schedule, if a rookie with a Dylan Gabriel or a Shedeur, you know, absolutely jumped up and grabbed this job by the throat, you know, that's one thing, the way that Russell Wilson did in Seattle many years ago now. But I think the reality is when you're starting Bengals, Ravens, Packers, Lions, Vikings, Steelers, those teams were a combined 40 games over 500 last year, that you probably want, it just feels like a tough environment to throw a rookie into. So you have to get one of these veterans, Kenny Pickett or Joe Flacco, I think really ready to go week one. And so that makes it hard to give a lot of one reps to Gabriel or Shedeur, although Gabriel is certainly getting some.
Nathan, if you would have told me a month ago Deontay Johnson not only could make the roster but could actually be a big-time target for one of these quarterbacks, I would have been very nervous. But according to everybody who's seen him so far, this reclamation project looks like it could be taking off. What have you seen?
So two things. This is a guy who's got a 1,000-yard receiver season under his belt. He's been a Pro Bowler. When he was with the Steelers, and I would talk to some of our corners, they would say that he was the toughest guy to cover in the league because he's such a good route runner and creates separation. And we've seen that. He had a route that was kind of, it was a post stop and then he cut it back out, kind of a double, almost even a triple move that he created about 10 yards. It was beautiful. In fact, it reminded me, and don't everybody go crazy here, but there was a route that Odell ran early in training camp when he was with the Browns where he just completely spun the defensive back around. That's what Deontay Johnson did. He looks fantastic. I think people also forget that last year when he left Carolina, he was actually their leading receiver. So he still can be incredibly productive in this league. Obviously, there are a lot of things that happen. As he said, last year was last year. He's moving forward. I think that if he is on the right path of the right mindset from a talent standpoint, you know, he's certainly a top three receiver on this football team. And, you know, the idea of being able to have Deontay Johnson, Jerry Jeudy, and Tillman out there together is very exciting. I do think we're going to play a ton of 12 personnel, but I think Deontay Johnson, you know, would be an excellent number two receiver if he continues what he's showing right now in camp. But he's consistently getting open. He's catching everything that's thrown his way. He has looked very, very impressive.
Nathan Zagura joining us here. Nathan, the running back room situation. I wanted to use Jerome Ford as a third down back. I think a lot of people obviously did, so I'm not bringing any news there. Quinshon Judkins is off the – you're not allowed to use him right now, obviously. What are we going to do here in this room with the running backs?
I'm just going to say what, you know, Jimmy Haslam and B. Haslam, the owner, said, which was they're cautiously optimistic that Quinshon Judkins will be here soon. And so I still think that Quinshon Judkins will be a huge part of what the Browns do in the running back room. I want to go to Jerome Ford, though, as you brought him up as a third down back. Listen, Jerome Ford last year averaged 5.2 yards a carry. He was top five in the NFL in yards per carry. He's been consistently able to hit long runs. So he really worked hard getting north-south after a couple of years where he was doing too much dancing behind the line of scrimmage. And I thought ran the ball very well for the Cleveland Browns. Dylan Sampson's got a lot of juice. That is very apparent at camp. And, you know, the guy was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. If you can do it in that conference, I am sure you can do it in the National Football League. So I think it's a room that they feel good about. But obviously, once Judkins gets back, then you're going to be very excited about that running back room. And I can tell you the offensive line loves Coach Blomgren. They love the things we're getting back to in this run game. You're going to see a lot of 12 personnel. And if you would ask me who's the one person that's impressed me the most in all of this training camp thus far, my answer would be Harold Fannin.
Did you see the electronic measurement thing in the Hall of Fame game yesterday by any chance?
I saw the graphic of it where it's I did.
So I saw the same thing, and my thought was, well, it's still based on the spot by the ref. Can
right.
we re-spot the ball, or how's that work?
So I'm with you 100%. The issue is not the fact that you had people out there with chains. The issue is where the ball was spotted. We've seen people run in from the sideline, and they have no idea if they're running straight or not, and typically they're usually not. So I don't mind the chain. To me, it's got to be accompanied by either cameras that place the ball or whatever the heck it is that they do in tennis where you get those cool kind of computer graphics, but it's always right for some reason. That's what it needs to be in the NFL. Because if it's based still on human spotting the ball, I don't care that we know exactly what 10 yards is. I'm pretty sure we knew that with the chain game. But if there's some kind of a chip in the ball where they triangulate and they can know exactly where the ball should be, that's a different story to me, and that will bring more accuracy.
Nathan Zagura, find him on Twitter at Nathan Zagura, clearly. Nathan, thank you very much for the time.
All right, before I go, though, what was your Taco Bell order specifically?
It was four tacos. I got four soft tacos. That's it. Swear
Supreme?
No.
Wow. An upset. Right.
Fresca style? Look at you.
What's Fresca style? What's that mean?
Well, it was a thing. I don't know if it's a thing anymore. It's been a while since I've been to Taco Bell, although I do love it. That's where they would just be like the tortilla, the meat, lettuce, and the pico de gallo. So no cheese, no sour cream, you know.
Yeah, I just got the regular ones and went through and we moved on with it. Of course, I'm getting texts about certain people not believing that. Check your phone, Nathan.
I still think you ate the meat. If I had a dollar I can put down on that, I'd say maybe a little scoop, a little tasty meat for you.
No micro bets.
You're buying into I got a man in a class A allegedly maybe in some trouble. You're buying into the stereotype, Nathan. That's all I'm gonna say right now, and I will address the issue on the other side of this break.
I would have eaten the meat.
Oh God. Nathan, thank you for the time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Nathan Zagura.
We got to figure out the quarterback conundrum. We got to talk. I mean, so many thoughts to get to here with NFL.com, NFL Network's Nick Shook on the fan hotline. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, you want to talk about unique names for prospects? How about Sicknarf Loopstock, the 13th round pick of the then named Cleveland Indians in the 2013 draft? There's one for you.
You know, they've got a new Sicknarf.
Oh my God.
I think also from Aruba. Yeah, they just signed a kid named Sicknarf, and I'm ready for it. I'm here for the Sicknarf reprise.
I'm just happy that you had another Sicknarf to follow that up. I thought I'd blow you away with that one.
Oh, buddy. Weird things? That's all I know. I would like to know, when you hear me say thoughts, does it sound like I'm saying T-H-O-T-S or thoughts like T-H-O-U-G-H-T-S?
Somebody wasn't a spelling bee champ. The way that you spelled that one there, the speed, lack of confidence.
big lack of confidence there.
In fairness, I'm a little on the fence here because I thought I was saying thoughts the right way, and then I was told I was saying thoughts the wrong way.
Yes, you were. It's thoughts. T-H-O-T-S. Phonetically accurate. Thoughts.
He's given me a look of like, nope. As if he's surprised.
No, I'm done. I'm checked out.
As if he's surprised. He's wrong here.
Yeah, I don't know thoughts. All right. I got no thoughts. I don't know thoughts. That's the man.
Thoughts on thoughts. Yeah.
That's going to be a podcast, by the way.
Thoughts on thoughts. I like that. It's going to end up on one of those. End up on Shannon Sharpe's media network or something like that.
Skip.
All right, Nick. Let's get into the Browns. Have you been to training camp yet or no?
No, I have not.
Okay. Because right now it's been run a little bit harsher than what we've seen in past years. In fact, we had live tackling, which I know you're in the area. I don't remember a Stefanski training camp where we've seen live tackling like the way that they're trying to do it here.
Yeah, well, when you go 3-14, I think toughening up your team in training camp might help you a little bit. But yeah, I can't think of the last time there was live tackling, say for maybe the Freddie year, and I think they toned that down pretty quickly. There was only a few days of really live tackling, and when that happened, that's when they played Mo Bamba over the speakers relentlessly to the point where I hated that song by day five.
Mm. Took you to day five.
Yeah.
Surprise.
So specific to then, actually, I want to get to the quarterback battle. It doesn't seem like Shador has a real chance. Kenny Pickett's got the hamstring injury. We still haven't heard the update on that. If this comes down to Joe Flacco, what does Dylan Gabriel have to do to steal this job week one?
That's a good question. He's got to show that he really has command of the offense and can also make all the throws, because we know that Joe Flacco has the arm. Like, that's the number one thing that came away from camp this week, was that he still has the arm, which we wouldn't question. That's why he's still on an NFL roster. Dylan Gabriel's biggest probably critique is the fact that he doesn't have the strongest arm. I liken him to poor man's Baker Mayfield, but a left-handed guy. And a little bit smaller with less of an arm. So he's got to be able to prove that he can operate Kevin Stefanski's offense within his own physical limitations so significantly that they feel confident about going with him in week one. But then again, there's a reason they traded up in the third round to draft him. And we haven't quite fully unpacked that, but maybe we'll see that by the end of the preseason. But yeah, he's got to have a stellar preseason, I think, to take that job. And it's the situation that we've kind of explored over the last few weeks going into this camp, the four quarterbacks and everything else. It obviously got more complicated with Kenny Pickett being sidelined by the hamstring injury, but I don't know if it got any clearer or any better necessarily, because Joe Flacco is no spring chicken. And it, again, sounds like Shador might not have a real shot at it, which, look, for all the discourse surrounding his slide in the draft, he's a pretty unremarkable quarterback, which is why he ended up going in the fifth round. So this is not entirely surprising, and what kills me about the whole push for him to get into the lineup, from the outside, is I saw yesterday, I think it was like a FanDuel or somebody posted a clip of him, and it said, Shador Sanders has been lighting it up in Browns camp, and it was a clip of him dropping back in the pocket, taking a while to escape the pocket, and then throwing like an 8-yard completion to a guy who was wild. And so that kind of tells you the state of the whole position right now. It's not like it's the highest bar to reach, but because Flacco still has the arm and the experience, it's going to be hard for either of those young guys to unseat him.
Have you removed Kenny Pickett from your equation, or are you saying when he gets back, he can just be just thrown right back in the mix?
I think that it makes it harder for him to go into week one as the starter. If he had the full camp, I feel like he was kind of the favorite or had a leg up, at least on the younger guys, of winning that sort of battle. And, ideally you go into the camp or you go into the regular season with Pickett is your starter. You know what you have in Flacco. He's your, you know, safety valve, your break glass in case of emergency. You can throw him in there if it's a disaster with Pickett. And then you turn to the rookies if you have to. Now with him out, it feels like Flacco is going to be your number one guy. And it's one of those two rookies. And if Pickett comes back healthy enough, he ends up being your backup, maybe ends up taking over at some point. But it just, I think it really makes the road much more difficult Pickett to be in the lineup early in the season, because hamstring injuries, and especially with corners and receivers, are such tricky injuries that you really have to be cautious with, because the aggravation likelihood is so much higher than another injury. So I think that's why you end up seeing Flacco week one, and ideally you get Pickett at you know, a backup. But yeah, I take him out of the running for now, unless he, you know, bounces back from the injury a lot better than most people do.
Nick Shook, NFL Network, NFL.com on the fan hotline here with Nick Wilson and JP. It's Jonathan Peterlin to you and me talking about the Browns here. All right, so just to what you're saying there, who's the odd man out at quarterback if the Browns only keep three quarterbacks?
That's a great question. I kind of, you know, when they drafted Gabriel and then they drafted Shador and they signed Joe Flacco, you know, they went to the draft with Flacco on the roster and Pickett on the roster. And as soon as they made those draft picks, I felt like Pickett was the most likely guy to get traded, because he has the most value as a trade piece, because he's not old, because he has some experience, you know, playing as a starter in previous years. And if it gets to that point, I could imagine them exploring such a trade and just accepting that, look, Flacco's our guy. And if he gets hurt or can't go, then we try out the rookies and we just kind of deal with it from there. It's kind of crazy, though, for me to consider. Like Andrew Berry said this week that he sees a scenario in which they keep all four. I mean, it's not like, you know, getting rid of a roster spot somewhere else, considering the depth of this roster or lack thereof. It's not the worst thing to, you know, eliminate a position somewhere else to keep four quarterbacks, but it is pretty unorthodox. So I feel like Pickett's probably your best trade chip, unless somebody really has a thing for Gabriel or Shador. And it seems like, again, with them trading up in the third round, they have a thing for Gabriel. The one home that I had seen a lot of people throwing out there, just, you know, as they're waiting for July to become August, was Gabriel to Miami, because of the style similarity to Tua Tagovailoa, left-handed, shorter quarterbacks, that sort of thing. But I feel like they really like him enough to keep him, and we'll see what happens from there.
One of the surprises so far at camp has been Diontae Johnson. Are we at a point where we can trust enough the idea that he can not only be a contributor, but maintain what he's been showing off so far in camp?
I hesitate to put too much stock into what we see in camp, just because this is the same period of the summer in which, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones had everybody convinced that he was going to be a superstar receiver. Or even way back in, 2001, Benjamin Gay, the running back, was the preseason darling that never even made the final roster. These things tend to get overblown at that time. But I will say he has plenty of proof in his career that he can be a productive receiver. The big issue for him over the last few years has been convincing him to play, has been motivating him to play. The weirdest thing about his last season was he was basically Carolina's top option early in the year, especially with Andy Dalton on the field, and was having a pretty productive season, so much that Baltimore was like, hey, we could use him on our roster. He ends up in Baltimore, and he dislikes it so much that he refuses to go into a game, and they have to end up suspending him and then part ways with him pretty quickly, which is just unusual, because that usually doesn't happen in Baltimore. They collect veterans all the time who are happy to be there, and he wasn't. So the big question mark for him going into this camp was, what is his motivation? Does he really want to play? And I think he got a dose of humble pie this offseason when he essentially admitted the Browns were the only team that were interested in me. And so I kind of had to go there. Maybe he sees this as an opportunity to reclaim his career and is motivated. And if he is motivated, yeah, I think he can be a productive receiver, because he's talented and he's proven it before.
Nick, you put out 16 names on NFL.com as the candidates for the NFL's first ever a Protector of the Year award going to the best offensive lineman. I'd like to say, no Wyatt Teller on that list, no DeJuan Jones on that list. Why do you hate Browns offensive linemen, Nick?
Lord knows I love the Browns guards, okay? Everybody loves Joel Bitonio. He's a decorated guard. Everybody loves Wyatt Teller, a guy that they got as basically a throw-in, and he ends up being an excellent guard, thanks in part to the tutelage of Bill Callahan back in the day. But I built this list with an idea of most of these guys are going to have to be on teams that are good or at least competitive, because offensive line is the one position that the average fan can't go scan a stat sheet and be like, oh, well, he's got 1,200 rushing yards, or he's caught 100 passes, and make their case for him. And there are a few people in the world that watch every play of every game like I do. So when it comes to voters, there are going to be people that just look toward, all right, well, who's had a great ground game this year? Okay, let's pick the best offensive lineman from that group. That's just the way offensive line awards tend to go. So I skewed toward names that people recognize and names that people will pick from teams that are expected to be good. That's why you see, you know, the Quentin Nelsons of the world, who has had a reputation as being a premier guard since he entered the NFL. That's why you have both of the Eagles tackles, who are not only very good, but are also on the defending champions. You have Trent Williams, who has quite a reputation as one of the best tackles, if not the best tackle in football. Penei Sewell, who even got Offensive Player of the Year votes last year. That's why these guys are on this list. And then I didn't really throw in guys that might get some attention for being on teams that maybe aren't that good until in the bottom half of the top 10. And those are guys like Joe Tooney, who was in New England, was in Kansas City, has an established reputation, goes to Chicago as a big addition to this offensive line. If their offense ends up being anything close to Detroit's offense under Ben Johnson in previous years, then he's going to get some looks. And the last guy is for the real ball knowers. That's Chris Lindstrom, the right guard from the Falcons. He was the best guard in football last year. And if, you know, the real ball knowers are involved with, you know, voting for this, then he's going to get some attention if he plays like he did last year. So it's a weird kind of award to award, and we have no history to judge it by, but I'm just going off of what I think I get from basic voters on basic awards every year, which is, all right, which guy's on a good team with a good running game or protected well, that sort of thing. And unfortunately, I don't think the Browns are going to be good enough to attract that attention.
Should Browns fans be worried about the idea that four out of the five offensive linemen are going to enter free agency after this season? Or is it the type of thing where you just watch like what Ben Johnson did with the Bears offensive line, and it's like, well, we can turn that over and find pieces, and there'll be enough guys that we're not going to really have a big issue when the time comes?
I would lean toward more worry, but I mean, do you really know what you have in DeJuan Jones? I mean, because he had a great rookie year. He got hurt last year, but he wasn't playing very well before he got hurt. Jack Conklin consistently gets hurt. Center has been just, plugged this gap with this veteran, you know, Ethan Posick the last couple of years, and figure it out from there. The only stability in guys that you really know are at guard. And Joel Bitonio almost retired this offseason, so Wyatt Teller's the only guy that you can count on. So I think I would be worried, though, because that type of turnover is hard to manage from year to year. You know, good offensive linemen don't grow on trees in this league. That's why people play, teams pay a premium to replace guys or acquire guys. So yeah, I think there should be some worry, and I wouldn't necessarily count on being able to just patch those holes in one off season. I mean, go look at what the Chiefs did. Like, the talk out of camp this past week is that Josh Simmons is looking really good. Well, Josh Simmons would have been the best offensive lineman in this class if he hadn't gotten hurt at Ohio State last year. So of course, back end of the first round pick is playing well with a really good team, but they threw a lot at their offensive line after they got dominated in the Super Bowl. They went out and got Jalen Moore, who didn't have a ton of starting experience, paid him $15 million a year. They shuffled guys around with swings and misses that they'd made in previous years, like Kingsley Suamataya, who was supposed to be their left tackle and was so bad that he got replaced by Wanya Morris, and now they're looking at Suamataya as a guard. He's competing with Mike Caliendo for that job. So the only guys they can really count on are their center and Creed Humphrey, who's probably the best center in the game, and right guard Trey Smith, who they just gave a huge contract after franchising him. That's how difficult it is to fill out that starting five. So I wouldn't count on that. I would be worried.
Ball knower Nick Shook, Cleveland Zone, on the fan hotline here, NFL.com. So looking at the division big picture, how would you rank all four AFC North teams in order right now?
Baltimore number one, Cincinnati number two, although we'll see if their defense can be better than they were last year, because that was an obvious issue. Pittsburgh three, with a team that we don't know what they're going to be. I think they're going to be more competitive than people think, but I don't see them as a title contender. So that's why they land behind Cincinnati, because if Cincinnati's defense can put it together, they have a great offense. If they can just get out of their own way in the first 2 weeks of the season, which they're 1-11 in games in the first 2 weeks of the season under Zach Taylor, it's been a huge, anchor around their ankle this entire time that he's been their head coach, then they could be in that conversation at least. But the Bengals, I think, are better than the Steelers, at least on paper, or at least in terms of potential. Not on paper, but in terms of potential. So it goes Baltimore, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, because I don't know what they're going to be entirely, but I do see, you know, the upside there. And then, unfortunately, the Browns in last.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin called it a bromance, the relationship he has with Aaron Rodgers. Are we going to get to, what, week four, week five, before all of a sudden the mutual admiration society between the two of them fades?
I mean, it's all about wins and losses, and if they struggle, then yeah. But here's the thing. Aaron Rodgers, for as much as he says he doesn't want to be in the spotlight, he commands the spotlight. We're going to talk about them all year. You better get ready for it. They're going to be in the conversation all year. Win or loss, they're going to be leading, you know, ESPN's morning talk shows because Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback and because Mike Tomlin is the head coach. I don't necessarily see them being that bad. It's just that they might not hit the ground running. And so, of course, they're going to be in the spotlight. They're going to have a lot of questions to answer. And then they'll eventually figure it out around the middle of the season, maybe make a playoff push. And how does the bromance survive through that? I don't know, because the mutual admiration is built on 20 years of being in the league together. And yet all of that can fall apart in about 8 weeks. So it's going to be something to watch, but I don't think it's ever going to get quite as drastic unless they are a massive disappointment.
Nick, the last couple of years, quarterback narratives, quarterback storylines that people were super excited on are will he, won't he, will the Buffalo Bills, will or won't, with Josh Allen, and you know, could he win the MVP? Then it's Lamar, and can he win a Super Bowl? It does feel like for some of the like those guys who've been in the picture for 4 or 5 years, some of those narratives have slowed a bit. What storylines revolving the quarterback right now going into the NFL season are you most in on?
I know I'm keeping a close eye on what's going on in Rams camp because Matthew Stafford has a history of entering camp at less than 100% and missing time. And it's been a harbinger of bad things to come for them in recent years. And he's got this back issue that kept him out of action for most of the first week. And, you know, some might pose it as, he's just a veteran, not taking reps in camp, and he knows he doesn't need to, that sort of thing. I'm not so certain. I wouldn't like to see the Rams be forced to play half the season with Jimmy Garoppolo or whatever. So I'm keeping an eye on that. But when it comes to real storylines, I think there's a little bit of fatigue right now around the quarterback position because you get Patrick Mahomes winning the AFC every year. You got Jalen Hurts, who is, you know, a quarterback who many people like to, you know, see as a game manager, and that he's not as good as some of the others, and it upsets a lot of Eagles fans who slide in my DMs because I didn't rank him in the top five of the QB index last year despite him winning the Super Bowl and so on and so forth. You got, those are kind of your stars right now, and then you have some fatigue with Lamar not getting to the Super Bowl and with Josh Allen's Bills not getting to the Super Bowl because they can't get past, you know, Goliath in Kansas City. So I don't know if there's necessarily a big shift in the tide of narratives at quarterback this season. I'm curious to see what Joe Burrow and the Bengals look like this season because pretty much every camp since his second year, he's dealt with a health issue at this time of the year, and he's not. And he said he's throwing it better than he has in years, and he feels great. So what does that produce? We'll see. But more than anything, I would like to see one of these quarterbacks who's been, you know, close but no cigar category. I would like to see one of them get over the hump finally so we can get some variety, some fresh blood, and we can silence at least one of those narratives this year.
Nick, we love your thoughts. Be good, buddy. We appreciate you, and we'll catch up down the line.
You love my thoughts. I appreciate that. So I don't know about my looks, but my thoughts, I'll take the thoughts. I love you guys. Again, I'm not ending it every time that way. I love you guys. And oh, by the way, the last time we talked, I said, trade Isaac Okoro. What did the Cavs do? They traded Isaac Okoro.
Mac, right now, our board op is just fuming.
He's livid.
He's raging. You are off the Christmas list. Be good, bud.
See you guys. Thanks.
Nick Shook there on the fan hotline. We'll react to what he had to say about the Browns picture there and the quarterback position in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.